This is the Fearless Presentations Podcast, the fastest, easiest way to reduce public speaking fear.
Want to absolutely eliminate public speaking fear? This podcast is the answer. Here's the guy who literally wrote the book on Fearless Presentations, Doug Stannert.
Hello, and welcome back to the Fearless Presentations Podcast, brought to you by the Leaders Institute and fearlesspresentations.com. I'm your host, Doug Stannert, president of the Leaders Institute, and this podcast helps people, just like you, get rid of public speaking fear and increase your success by increasing your confidence when you communicate. Today, we have part two of a two-episode topic. The step-by-step process that I went through to go from a poor, skinny trailer park kid from Arkansas to one of the top public speaking coaches in the world. So hopefully my story will be both inspirational and informative to you. This podcast is brought to you by fearlesspresentations.com. I know a lot of you have subscribed to the podcast. You know, a lot of you who have subscribed to the podcast are graduates of the two-day Fearless Presentations class. And a lot of you are actually folks who maybe looked into attending one of the Fearless Presentations classes, but wanted to kind of listen to a few podcasts to see if we were really on the level before you actually paid the fee, which is fine. That's great. That's what it's here for. One of the great things about being a graduate of the program, though, is that you can come back and take the class a second time for free as long as we have space available in the class. So if you're a graduate and you're looking for a refresher, make sure and check out the schedule of upcoming classes on fearlesspresentations.com. If you're actually one of those folks who are just checking us out, you may want to, if you're actually looking at taking a class with us anyway, you might want to hurry, because anytime I remind graduates on a podcast about that policy, all of a sudden the spaces fill up very quickly. So if you're looking at taking a class, make sure and go very quickly and register for one, and hopefully we'll have space available. So let's get started with today's podcast. So today's episode is a continuation of the podcast from last week, and the last, I was basically on that podcast telling you my story about how I went from, you know, being a terrible speaker, a skinny kid who couldn't do anything really, to being a top motivational speaker. And I kind of told my story about how I had that tremendous failure my junior year in college, where I had a tough time actually delivering a presentation for a big oil company, and how I came back the second year, a year later, really less than a year later, and gave a second speech. And I was going to pick right, so our podcast is going to pick up right at that spot where I left off last week. So here you go. This time I was going to have to speak in front of like 600. And so now all of a sudden I'm going, oh man. So I remember the vow that I made. I said, I am not going to let public speaking fear cost me this opportunity. Now, basically, this was an opportunity for me to, unlike before, where I was just going to be able to kind of promote myself to one company. Now I've got 600 potential new people that could hire me when I graduate from college. And man, I did not want to screw this up. So I began studying. And the first, I read a book from cover to cover. It was called Fear the Fear and Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. And it was a phenomenal book. It was one of those things that it was one of those kind of life-changing experiences. And I also read the book How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie. And I started reading, and I started practicing more and more. So I was able to kind of design a pretty good, you know, 3.5 minute speech, added some humor in it this time. And I just practiced that thing over and over and over and over and over again. I had my delivery down pat. So the night of the convention, I strategically waited until just the right point in the agenda, just a few minutes before I was going to go on stage. And I went over to the head of the intern program at ARCO. So this was the person who chose not to interview me a few months prior to that, to the meeting. So, and I thanked her for allowing me to work for the company the prior year. And we made some small talk for a couple of minutes. And eventually it got to the point where she asked me what I was doing there at the meeting, you know, because it really was kind of odd for a person, a student anyway, to come to one of the big conventions. Some students did, but it just wasn't very common. Most of the folks who were there were, you know, had been in the business for 10, 15, 20 years. And just about, it was perfect. I mean, I couldn't have timed this better, because just about the time that she asked me that question, the person came on stage to, all of a sudden the lights kind of dimmed down. The person came on stage to present me with my award. So I excused myself and I made my way to the stage and I got up on stage. I think I did pretty well. I mean, I got some really good feedback. It was really short and sweet, lots of energy. It was fun. I was funny. You know, basically a totally different perception of where I was just, you know, 12 months before that. And so after I kind of nailed it on stage, I was really feeling good about myself. I went back over to the woman from Marco and I said, "Oh, I'm so sorry about that. Sorry for the interruption, but you were saying," I just kind of waited for her to respond. It was priceless. I mean, it was one of those things it was probably petty, you know, but you know, I wanted to show her that, hey, one mistake that, you know, I made one mistake, but you made a much bigger mistake in not inviting me back. So I wanted to kind of prove to her. And I think, over the years, the success that I've had, I've probably kind of proved that. Interestingly enough, though, 3 years after I graduated, I went back to the office that I'd worked at ARCO. And they had downsized dramatically by then. So when I was in that office, there were 300 people that basically did what I did as a landman. So there are 300 landmen in the office in the year that I worked there, or the summer that I worked there. 3 years later, they had three. So they went from 300 to three. And in fact, a lot of the friends that I had there that I'd worked with and had a great experience with, they'd worked for that company for 10, 15, 20, 30 years. They lost their jobs and they had to pretty much start over from scratch. So I realized what a blessing that I had, that I'd received by not getting asked to come back that summer. So, you know, with the old Garth Brooks song, Unanswered Prayers, you know, some of God's greatest gifts are those unanswered prayers. So, you know, so I guess lesson six is probably, you know, success is really the best revenge. So just go out and succeed. That's the best way to get revenge. What happened, though, was that public speaking fear that I had that previous year, it really led to my transition in career. So since I had such a great experience with Dave's company in Denver, when I graduated, I worked for a small oil company in West Texas that was owned by the former mayor of a little town called Big Spring. And it was just like Dave's company, just like Herbally, where I reported directly to the owner of the company. So I was learning fantastic information about how to run a business and how to do things the correct way in a business setting. So it's totally different from the corporate gig that I had had, you know, a couple years or 3 years prior to that. So the big challenge, though, at that time was that the price of oil had dropped down to about $16 a barrel, maybe $16.50 a barrel. So it was pretty low. And I remembered when I was at ARCO, they told me that if oil, the price of oil was under $50, they couldn't make a profit. And as it kind of went down further and further, that was where companies like Dave's were able to come in and make a profit where some of the bigger companies couldn't do it. But once it got down to $16.50 a barrel, even the small companies couldn't make a whole lot of money there. So it was a matter of waiting. It was a waiting game. A lot of companies were shutting in these wells, and so there wasn't as much business, especially for a land work. And so I knew that sooner or later that my boss was going to have to let me go, because I could see the numbers. I could see that the number of contracts that we were getting weren't nearly what they were when I started, and they were kind of slowing down. So still, one of my friends from college who lived in the same town, and he was in sales. He had gone into sales right after graduating from college. And he said, "Man, Doug, with your personality, you know, you'd make a killing in sales. You should go into it." But I was kind of nervous. I didn't know exactly how to. I mean, the only sales experience that I had was, you know, back when I was in elementary school and I sold candy bars. That was basically my only sales experience. And I remember how uncomfortable I was doing it. So I wasn't really sure that was going to be a good career change. But I just saw the money that Troy was making. So I figured I should probably experiment with it. And it really wasn't a tough choice to make, because I knew that I had to do something. I knew that it was just a matter of time before my boss was going to have to let me go. just wasn't enough work. So I decided to look for some help. So I was flipping through the Yellow Pages. You know, this was back before the internet, and I came across Sales Recruiter. I'm thinking, oh wow, okay, a sales recruiter. Well, if somebody is actually recruiting salespeople, then they would probably know how to train a salesperson or you know, give at least point me in the right direction. So I was just about to call the number, and right underneath the header of Sales Recruiter was the header Sales Training. And I'm like, well, duh, okay, Sales Training. But you know, being in West Texas, there weren't a whole lot of options. So there was one company listed underneath the header of Sales Training. It was Dale Carnegie Training. And I remembered back, you know, wait a minute, 3.5 years ago, I read that book by Dale Carnegie, How to Win Friends and Influence People, and it really helped me in that public speaking gig that I had. So maybe it was a sign, right? So I called the number right away. Met with the instructor for the classes there, and we met for coffee, and she assured me that if I paid the $895, I think is what it was at the time, which I looked that up, that's about almost $2,200 in today's dollars, so it was a significant amount of money for me back then. And so if I paid that fee and then completed the entire 3-month course, she said that the class would definitely help me become a good salesperson. But as soon as she said that, though, my initial response was, how much and how long? What? I mean, that was just a tremendous amount of money and a tremendous amount of time. 3 months just seemed like a long time to go through a class. She looked me straight in the eye and she said, hey, if the class is important enough for you, and if it's important enough for you to succeed in this new career, that you'll come up with the time and you'll come up with the tuition. And I knew that I needed help, and I was pretty sure that she would be able to help me. So I looked her back in the eye and I said, you know what? I'll be there. I'll find some way. I'll be there. And the class was going to start in 3 weeks. And I had, at the time, I think I had about $300 in my bank account. So didn't have a whole lot of money. Didn't have a whole lot of time to come up with the additional funds. So I traveled a lot in the job that I was working at. I traveled a lot, but I was going from small county courthouses in West Texas from one to the other. But the neat thing about it was that I got to travel per diem. So they would give us, I think it was like $35 a day, maybe it was $25. It wasn't a lot anyway, but it was a little bit of money. And what I figured out that I could do is I just kind of brought peanut butter and jelly sandwiches with me for that 3 weeks. And I took that per diem and kind of put it into my bank account, and slowly it kind of creeped up a little bit. By the time that the class started, though, I was still about $150 short of what I needed to join the class. And so I remember it was a big struggle for me, because I remember going to the ATM with my credit card and sticking that credit card in there and punching in my PIN number on the credit card. So the credit card, not debit card, so a credit card, and getting a cash advance for an extra $150 so I could put it in and take the class. And one of the best investments I ever made, though, because when I showed up at the class, and Marianne, the lady who was the instructor, she was really shocked when she saw me, because it took her, I think, because it had been a few weeks since we had had coffee, I think it took her a few minutes to remember who I was. And I said, I don't know if you remember me, but I'm Doug Standard. I met you 3 weeks ago at the coffee shop. And she said, oh my gosh, yeah. And I presented her with a check. I said, if there's still a space in the class, I'd like to join. And her mouth kind of dropped open, because she looked at me and she said, a lot of people tell me that they're going to follow through, but very few people actually do that. And so I think that was one of my other life lessons that I kind of picked up on, is you keep your word and you're going to gain respect from the people who really matter. So the class did take 3 months to complete. And after about the first 4 weeks, though, I went to my boss and I quit. I thought that I had enough information that would help me in my new career, and I was right. So, by the way, my boss was really relieved that I quit, because he knew what I knew. He knew that sooner or later I was going to have to fire him, and he just didn't want to have to do that to me. And so so we kind of parted on really good terms, and I got my first job as a door-to-door salesman. Being brand new to sales, not having any experience, there weren't a whole lot of opportunity out there. And interestingly enough, the first company that I worked for was a company in West Texas. And the my first boss was a guy named Scott Yancey. If you've ever seen the TV show Flipping Vegas, the guy who flips houses in Las Vegas, he was my first boss. He was my first sales manager. And at the time, we were working for his brother's company, for Scott's brother's company. And this was back in the early days of satellite TV, where the DirecTVs and Dish Network and all those were just coming out. And so a lot of these companies were being created to kind of meet that new demand, to get away from cable companies and go to satellite. And so I was basically selling satellite dishes door to door. That was my first job. And I was there for about 6 months, and within from day one until that 6 month mark, I ended up becoming the top salesperson that they had. Now, I just had a knack for it. It was just one of those things that I was just using the skills that I had developed in that leadership class, or that I was developing in that leadership class that I was taking, that Marianne was teaching me. And I was just applying them in the real world, and it was working pretty well. I was the folks that I was selling to were folks that wanted what I was offering, and so I was helping them solve a challenge that they had, and so it was a great win-win for everybody. I was helping them cut their costs down, their household costs, and they were getting more choices. So it was a pretty easy sell in a lot of cases, but about 6 months after I started, though, and I just become the top sales guy, all of a sudden I walk into the office one day and Scott's not there, and his brother is. And I knew something was kind of odd, but I didn't know exactly what was going on. Turned out Scott had moved to Las Vegas, I guess, to start his real estate career, and apparently it was a very quick move. It was one where he didn't give his brother a lot of notice, and so his brother was kind of left hanging. He didn't have anybody to manage, and he knew that I had a college degree. He knew that I was had been pretty successful in the short time that I was there, and he reluctantly kind of offered me the sales management position. He offered me Scott's job, and I was kind of shocked. You know, it was number one because I really only had 6 months of sales experience. I had no management experience, but it was an increase in pay, and that was one thing that I kind of needed to get out of debt and kind of get back on the right track. And what was nice about that position, though, was that I got my first bonus check the next month, 30 days after I started as the sales manager, and morale was up. You know, people were having a good time. We were having fun. It was interesting. It was a neat job, and I was hiring people left and right because there was such a demand for what we had. And my bonus check came in. So this was in addition to my salary and my own commission, because I was still making sales myself. I got my bonus check. My bonus check was bigger that month than what I had been making at the oil company when I left 6 months earlier. So that was just my bonus part. That didn't include my salary and my commission. And I remember calling up Marianne. I called up the lady who taught my leadership class, and I said, "Hey, this stuff really works. I mean, I've only been doing this for a few months, and I'm already making way more. I'm doubling and tripling my income, what seemed like at will." So I it started me on a roll. A short time after that, I think it was maybe a year or so later, got recruited by an advertising company to come and work for their company as a salesperson, not as management, but it was an even bigger jump in pay than what I was making with my bonus checks and everything. So, I mean, every time I was being recruited to go to a new company, they were offering more and more, and the opportunities were just increasing. And after working for that advertising company for a couple of years, I said, "Hey, you know, this has really changed my life. This is moved me from being nervous and shy to being really outgoing and being interesting and successful." And so I knew that I kind of wanted to help. So I went back to Marianne and I said, "Hey, you know, this stuff really works. Can you train me, or do you need some help? I mean, I'll do whatever you need." And she said, "You know, I am looking for a salesperson." And so I became her first salesperson out in West Texas. And I was with that company. I was with the Dale Carnegie Company for about 6 years. And during that 6 year time period, the first 3 years or so, I was basically just in sales. Although I was working with some of the best instructors in the world. These were people that were phenomenal at helping people create behavior change, and they still are, by the way. Fantastic organization. And so for the first 3 years I was in sales. The next 3 years I was still doing sales, but I was also doing a lot of instruction. I was doing training. And when I left the company after about 6 years or so, I had been recognized on three separate occasions for superior instruction. So, you know, being in the top tiers of their instructors, and they would put out a rating every year of the salespeople that generated the most revenue for the company. And I think when I left, it was 30 out of 3,000. So I was way up at the top of the list. And I think the difference, you know, because up until that point, the success that I had, especially in sales, and the little bit that I'd done keep teaching and coaching as a manager, it was coming as a result of the training that I had, and I was basically continuing to study. I was reading books left and right. I would read a book a week. I'd read about 50 books a year, and I also had, when I was in sales, I would go from sales call to sales call in my car. I'd put in tapes or CDs of motivational speakers and trainers, and I was learning the whole time. I was constantly feeding myself with positive stuff. And so I knew that it wasn't just the initial training that I had, but it was the continuing training that I was generating that was causing me to continue to get those strides and become better and better at what I was doing. And that really crystallized when I got to that company, because I knew that every single person that was a salesperson or instructor for that company had been through the same training that I had been through. But I still got to the top of that tier as well. And the reason why is because I wasn't just relying on what I learned from their training. I was looking for experts from all kinds of different industries. I was continuing to grow. And that's what really kind of made me successful, not only as a business person, but also as a speaker and trainer. One of the main thing that a lot of times folks will kind of say, well, why did you leave? I mean, you were there for 6 years. And by the way, I love the company and it's still a fantastic organization. But I kind of noticed something it was so apparent. And it's funny how the things that happen to you in your life cause triggers that allow you to see things more clearly. And when I was at Carnegie, one of the things that I noticed was during the dot-com boom. So the boom and bust of the late 90s. And one of the things that I noticed at Carnegie was the same thing that had happened at ARCO. ARCO was this big, huge Fortune 4 company that was so successful that it became very difficult to make changes and very difficult to adapt to the marketplace. So when the price of oil started to drop, they had a difficult time adapting. The smaller companies like Dave's company and the company I worked for in Big Spring, they were able to adapt because they were smaller and more nimble. Carnegie was the same way. Carnegie had 3,000 salespeople and about 1,000. Yeah, 3,000 salespeople and 1,000 instructors. And so, if they wanted to make a single change to any one of their classes, it took years. It took years. And when the dot-com craze started hitting, the marketplace was changing so fast that they had a very, very difficult time keeping up with it. And so I saw that as an opportunity. And I said, hey, if I'm ever going to start my own company, this is the time to do it. So in 2000, I went out and started the Leaders Institute. And basically, I kind of took some of the positive things that I'd learned from, I don't know, probably about 200 different sources, and I cataloged them into a single class that we call Fearless Presentations. And it worked. It worked really well. The reason why it worked so well for us, by the way, was that what I was doing was I started out with pretty good content in the beginning. Because I had the training at Carnegie, and because I had been a manager, and because I had been in sales, I knew what worked, especially what was working in the new marketplace, and as a result, I was kind of putting that into my classes. But I was also adapting very quickly. So that very first class, although it was really good, it wasn't perfect. And so what the things that worked in that first class, I kept. And the things that didn't work as well, I kind of took out and replaced them with something else. And I did that again, and I did that again, and I did that again, and I did that again. So in the first 2 or 3 years, although the first class was really good, that by the end of that third year, the class was excellent. I mean, the Fearless Presentations class became so good so fast because of those adaptations that we were making. Now, it wasn't all, you know, glamorous and rosy. You know, when I started Leaders Institute, that was in March of 2000. I think my total revenue at the end of 2000 was about $27,000, and most of that came from one client. So it was a pretty meager kind of start. And I think the next year, I think we topped out at about $70,000 in revenue. And in 2003, I think we hit about $250,000-$300,000, something like that. So we were, but the thing is that we were growing, or I was growing anyway, because it was just me up until 2003. I was growing, doubling my income every single year. And I did that over and over and over and over again. So by the time that we hit, you know, 2005, 2006, we broke $1 million for the first time. We had about 12 different instructors. And I think by 2007, we were doing 200 Fearless Presentations classes every single year around the world. We were in pretty much every major city in the United States and Canada. Plus, we were also doing a lot of classes in Europe at the time. And folks were asking us to come to different parts of the world as well. And like I said, it wasn't perfect, because in those first few years, it was quite a struggle. I mean, I can remember, it's kind of a funny story, but the first year, 2003, was when I first started bringing on contract instructors. I didn't even have any full-time employees. I had some instructors that I had trained to teach the Fearless Presentations class. And so they were teaching in some of the cities that it was easier for them to get to than me. And so I started making money for the first time. So the bank account, instead of being kind of in the very low or negative balance, it was in the positive realm. And I knew that the whole time that I was working for other people, I never really felt like I was getting paid what I was worth, you know. I mean, and so I wanted to make sure that the folks who were working for the Leaders Institute were well compensated. So at the end of 2003, I wrote bonus checks for like Christmas bonuses, which I think is probably illegal, but you know, because they were contract instructors. But you know, I wanted to reward the folks that had been there for me in that first year. And after I wrote the checks, I realized that I had made a mistake, and I didn't actually have enough money in the bank to cover those checks. And my little brother was getting married in December of 2003, and I was his best man. So my wife and my daughter and I we flew into Orlando, and I'd already realized that I'd made that mistake. And I knew that if my contractors started cashing those checks before I got back, and before I deposited something else in that bank account, that we were going to be way overdrawn. And so I was panicking the whole time that I was at my brother's wedding and reception and everything. I was just very nervous that when I got back, I wasn't going to have a company left. And I remember that we went to the Rainforest Cafe one night, and my brother invited us all. I mean, the whole family, and you know, he was doing okay. He wasn't making a ton of money, so it wasn't like he was going to pay for everybody to go. And it was a fairly expensive menu for us anyway at the time. And I remember my daughter, who was, you know, a toddler at the time, and my wife and I splitting an appetizer and drinking water, because just so we had enough money to get back home. We had to be able to get a taxi to get back home when we got home. So it was, and then when we landed at DFW Airport, we went straight to the post office box. And I remember saying a little prayer before I opened up the post office box, just say, please God, please let there be some nice big checks that we've been waiting for in our accounts receivables. And I opened, you know, I turned the key and opened up the door and kind of peeked in, and it was stacked, and in there were three pretty good sized checks that we'd been waiting for a couple of months. And I rushed down to the bank, deposited those things, and it was funny. I remember vividly that whole progression, and from that point on, the success of Fearless Presentations just exploded. I mean, we went from teaching 5, 6, 7, 8 classes a year to, like I said, a couple of years later, doing 200 classes a year, and we've never looked back. So never had to worry about money, never had to worry, and been able to highly compensate my instructors and salespeople for years, and attract really some of the most powerful instructors in the world to Fearless Presentations as a result of it. So What we did was we created a pattern for success. And when you create that pattern for success, your success becomes automatic. We just did the same thing over and over and over again, and it's foolproof, right? So, and that's what I would suggest that you do as well. I mean, if you're having some of those struggles, if you're in one of those situations where things aren't going as well as what you want them to, whether that's in public speaking or in business or whatever it is, realize that a lot of times these challenges that you're experiencing are just learning opportunities. They're situations that you'll look back on a year or two from now and you'll go, man, that was a life-changing experience. That thing that seemed so terrorizing at the time, or that thing that seemed like such a bad deal for me back when it happened, has actually been one of the more positive things that ever happened to me. And that's what's happened in my life and my career, and I hope you have the same experience. So, hey, by the way, I mean, if you're inspired by, you know, maybe some of my successes, or maybe you're just kind of sitting out there going, God, that guy's a doofus. You know, if you're thinking, God, that guy's a doofus, then that's all the more reason why what I'm saying is true then, because if I can do this, anybody can do it, right? I mean, if a doofus like me can do this, geez, anybody can be a professional speaker. But if you're inspired, then make sure and connect with me. Let me know. I mean, let me know if you've kind of subscribed to the podcast, if you're listening to the podcast, you can connect with me on Facebook, on LinkedIn. LinkedIn is probably my favorite. I mean, I don't check Facebook as much as some of the others, but if you send me a message on LinkedIn or you ask me to connect on LinkedIn, I always accept. So connect with me on LinkedIn. Follow my Twitter feed. Twitter feed will allow, anytime we have new podcasts come out, it always shows up on the Twitter feed, so it lets you know. And also subscribe to the podcast, because that's the best way to kind of keep in touch with the new stuff that we're creating and the new ideas that are being generated out in the marketplace. So I hope you enjoyed, you know, kind of hearing my story and. Hopefully it kind of let you laugh a little bit, and we'll see you on future Fearless Presentations podcasts.
Subscribe to this podcast for new public speaking secrets each week.